Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Cracks Sidewalks. Joe McCain here once again with Phil Bush. Phil, this team just keeps on winning. I guess that makes this thing a little more fun to do.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy when we don't have to have some sort of Eeyore podcast. This is starting to feel nice.
Hopefully this is a trend that continues, and looking at the schedule, hopefully a few more wins on the way for Marquette, not to get ahead of ourselves, but there are some challenging games in the weeks to come, but we'll see if they can keep this thing going. The first five-game Big East winning streak under Wojo, which is significant, I think.
When was the last time we had, and with neither one of us prepared for this, but the question just came to mind, when was the last time we had a four-game or greater winning streak?
In the Big East?
Yeah, in the Big East.
I want to say, I saw somebody say that the other day. I want to say it was like maybe like the next to last year under Buzz. I think 2012. They're definitely in 2012. We had several in a row. Gosh, like seven. Yeah, seven in a row. And let's see. That was 2012. 2013. Yeah, I think that's probably about it, because looked like nothing more than four in 2013, and then the wheels came off in 2014. So, yeah, 2013.
Okay, so it's been a bit.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute. So, there are game previews and recaps this week are going to be kind of shorter. We're going to maybe talk a few metrics in today's show. Maybe not get too deep into it, because maybe miss listening to numbers over and over again on a podcast maybe isn't exactly the most interesting content. But we're making it maybe kind of look at where Marquette shapes up in the national picture, maybe start talking about seeding and where they're shaping up as far as looking at the tournament. And we'll also talk about a little bit about the games to come this week against DePaul and Xavier. But I think we'd start the show, Phil, with what was a pretty good Monday for Marquette, considering there was no game. Just some of the notes from Monday. You may see Marquette is ranked 12th in the latest AP poll, 11th in the coaches' poll. Those are both highs under Wojo as well, so that's notable. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the women's team is top 10 for the first time ever. That's the highest ever for the Marquette women's program. I think I saw highest ever since the Big East reformed for any Big East team in the women.
Wow, really?
Big East women?
I would have thought DePaul's women's team would have been ranked high at some point, but maybe I'm just making that up.
But it's certainly notable. So, again, obviously this is a Marquette men's podcast, but definitely want to give a shout-out to the Marquette women who have been outstanding this season, and hopefully their success continues. So good news in the polls so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And good news in some of the metrics and determination. So, a five-game winning streak and only having lost three games will earn you some good kudos from the coaches, and the new net ranking, which replaces the RPI, is also starting to reward Marquette a little bit. They are 21 as of yesterday in the net ranking.
Yeah, really moving. Yeah, like Alan Bykowski, he kind of touched on some of the team sheets and the quadrant rankings, but if you want to maybe jump into that a little bit, Phil, so kind of like what kind of jumps out to you on Marquette's rankings and the latest team sheets as you're kind of stacking their resume against some of the other teams in the country?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is so the net, I think Alan also had an article or maybe it was Paint Touches. No, it was actually Paint Touches a couple of weeks ago talking about why the predictive models like KenPom and Sagarin and BPI weren't ranking Marquette that high, even though they were climbing in the polls. One, that's because other teams were losing and Marquette wasn't. But two, it's also the way they calculate numbers and efficiencies. You know, Marquette's just not an efficient team. Their losses were blowouts, and a lot of their wins were close. We saw two more close wins, you know, for the most part this week. But I think what's starting to get interesting is the net, which is kind of mysterious what all goes into it. But it seems to not necessarily be a predictive model, but more of a, you know, kind of a raw what does the team do well, not do well, and who are they playing, and are they playing well against those player teams? So with them showing up as 21 in the net, I mean, that's a real positive. Because now Marquette has lots of room to hurt themselves, I suppose, but they've kind of built up a cushion that really should help come March time frame. And the thing that really shows up to me on the team sheets is that for the most part, with a significant exception this coming Wednesday, Marquette can almost do no significant harm to its standing. By that I mean getting a Q3 or a Q4 loss.
Basically what you're saying is Wednesday is the biggest landmine left on the schedule.
Yes, exactly. There is the Georgetown game at home, but theoretically, if we can beat them, if we can beat Georgetown on the road without Marcus and without Ed Morrow, I have to believe we can beat them at home with both of them, assuming they're both remain healthy. So I'm not as concerned about Georgetown at home, but yes, the DePaul. The DePaul game scares me. A home loss to DePaul would be a quadrant three loss, which, while not devastating, is not good and would certainly erode some of that.
Yeah, game. I mean, yeah, it's a turd of a loss, but it's not like maybe a loss that keeps you out of the tournament just because Marquette has so much goodwill built up to this point. But yeah, you just don't want a stinker like that on your resume. Before we kind of get into previewing the games of this week, one other note. By the way, I did double check. That is regarding the Marquette women. They are the first women's Big East team to reach the top 10 in the AP poll since the league reformed.
Wow. All right.
So that's notable. That's pretty awesome. So
that's
good for them.
That's awesome.
And
good
the other Carolyn Keeger note from this week, and this is kind of maybe allows us to maybe talk about the week that was a little bit, was the Hauser brothers became the first pair of brothers in Big East history to win both the Big East Player of the Week and the Big East Freshman of the Week. That was announced on Monday. Of course, Sam had an outstanding week. As you mentioned, I mean, he really kind of carried the load with Marcus Howard hurting against Georgetown. He averaged 28 points, 7.5 boards last week and two wins. Joey had a solid week as well, 10.5 points, 6 boards in two games, shooting well from the field. He had shot 53% from the field, again, also helping with two wins. Those guys definitely played a huge role with Howard out. You know, the win over Georgetown's kind of old news at this point, but it's just so notable. I just want to kind of touch on the takeaways from that game, Phil. Is that it was great to see Marquette grind out a win without Marcus, because Marcus really, I mean, he only played a couple minutes, didn't really contribute, and missed the entire game with those back spasms. But I was just so impressed with the way that team was able to navigate that potential disaster, like a situation that would not have totally shocked me if the team just totally folded and got blown out after it happened. But the way they were able to kind of figure it out, and, you know, a lot of credit to Wojo, kind of figuring out, all right, who's going to be the point guard and what's working, what's not, and definitely the Hausers stepping up in that one.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, when you think about it, without Marcus playing and without Ed Morrow to kind of spell Theo John, especially against someone like Georgetown, who's got, you know, Govan, who's a big who can shoot from outside, as we saw, and as well as kind of post up. There was all sorts of reasons for them to fall apart, right? They didn't have a traditional ball handler. Joe Chartouni has kind of put a couple of games here together, which not great, right?
And I'm trying not to be too harsh on Chartouni, but because, you know, I know he's doing his best out there and trying to contribute, but he struggled. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you know, hopefully that was just a temporary struggle, and maybe he can get his confidence back a little bit. But just face the facts, and just the way Wojo played that game, he just didn't seem to have much confidence in Chartouni out there running the point. And he's like, I'm going to be more comfortable with the Hausers bringing it up, or Sakaar. Sakaar did most of the ball handling as far as bringing the ball up, and Brennan Bailey even played a little point guard in that game. So, I mean, that was nice to see his contributions from him in that game. So, you know, everybody stepped up with Howard hurting, and again, Chartouni mostly ineffective in that game. So, I'm not sure what that means for Joseph going forward, but it was great to see, like, the contributions from guys, especially a guy like Bailey, who hardly plays, really made a nice impact.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was leading to with the point was that, like, for that team, yeah, they got down 8-9 points a couple of times where you could have said, oh, especially in the first half where you could have said, oh, it's just not our night. Marcus is out. It's not going to go well. But that team kind of, you know, they never – I guarantee you they've never practiced with Marcus Howard not playing point guard and Sakaar and Sam and Joey kind of doing the ball handling for the most part. So, like, the team was every player just about was playing out of position, and to do that and do it well, and like you said, highlighting Brendan Bailey, not only was it Brendan Bailey offensively contributing, but quite frankly, his defense was outstanding. Yeah, he got bailed out a couple of times, especially the last possession, because, you know, freshman point guard being freshman point guard, Aquino drove probably when Patrick Ewing didn't want him to, and Brendan got a huge block there. But, yeah. You know, his defense was tremendous, and it's a heck of a coaching job by Wojo. He only had I can't remember the last time I saw this, but essentially zero bench points, right? If you take Marcus out and put Brendan in for him in the starting lineup, only five players scored for Marquette, and Marcus wasn't one of them. So to get a win with that kind of production from just five players and shortening the bench is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, speaking of Akinjo, not to get off topic, but I saw he lost his starting spot at Georgetown after his going rogue in the Marquette game.
Not shocked. Well,
I think it's a coaching moment for a freshman, so that's something Patrick Ewing's got to deal with. But yeah, you know, Bailey did get a couple big blocks in that game, and you know, so that's the thing with Howard out and Chartouni not playing very much. Somebody had to chase those guards around, and because you know the Hausers, you know, as good an effort as they give defensively, that's asking a lot for them to guard Akinjo and McClung. So for Bailey and Sakaar to get out there and do it, I thought they did an outstanding job. And yeah. You know, like I said, and Bailey using his length to get a couple blocks there, and you know, some of it was maybe bad decision making on Akinjo's part, but you know, Bailey took advantage of it, and the whole Marquette team did. Yeah, the defense definitely helped them kind of grind out that game, plus Hauser's outstanding shooting.
Yeah, well, and you know, Sam tied a career high, or did he exceed his career high with 31?
It was career points. High for him.
It was career high. So, you know, you got to wonder how that game for Georgetown, for Sam Hauser in particular, but the players in general, how much that will have a long-term benefit. Obviously, you don't want to go into a game like that and lose Marcus and risk a loss and stuff like that. But does that give, you know, we saw it in the Providence game that Sam just seemed to have more confidence, right? So do the players generally, and Sam in particular, as a result of kind of playing without Marcus, go, you know, hey, we really can contribute here. We can step up. It doesn't have to be the Marcus Howard show. You know, so is that a long-term benefit, not just the win, but is it a long-term benefit in your mind for the team as a whole?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there are parallels to last season, because remember he went down in the Creighton game last year.
Yeah, where Sakaar went nuts in the second half.
Yeah, and that was a win, like, at the time that kind of saved the season, where I think as Marcus was lying on the court in Omaha last season, I think we were all saying, well, that's it, we're done. And then they rallied, won the game, won the next one against St. John's, and then the season ended at DePaul after that, or against DePaul and a couple games later. But that was a temporary season saver at the time. And, you know, the team was able to see they could win without Marcus then, but it was a little different because you still had Rousey as far as a guy as an explosive guard who could carry the offense. This year, when you lose Howard, you're wondering, you know, as good as some of these other players are, where's the offense going to come from? Do you need Marcus to generate things for the Hauser brothers? And the answer we found against Georgetown was no. I mean, they were able to create enough offense, and Hauser was aggressive and confident and hit some big outside shots, and a lot of guys just contribute. Sakar was great in that game. But yeah, I think that is a long-term benefit going forward. That, you know, it's a cliche you hear all the time, but sometimes they don't always execute that next man up mentality, right? Everyone says that, but not every team is like plays like that when a star player doesn't have it, or when a star player is out or ejected or sitting in foul trouble or something like that. But the fact that Marquette was able to play so well and win the game without Howard was great, and you know they were prepared to do the same on Sunday against Providence. Thankfully, they didn't have to, and Howard was able to play. Maybe not his best game, but he was certainly fine. I think every guy on that team knows his number could be called at any time. Like, you know, Brendan Bailey went into that game probably not knowing how much playing time he was going to get, even though, you know, it was kind of a little story that, you know, he was back in Washington, D.C., where he did his Mormon mission, and he had a lot of family and friends there. So he was probably excited to play in front of them, but he was just hoping he would get a few minutes. He probably didn't know he would play as many minutes as he did and play as well as he did. But, you know, every guy on that bench knows they could come in at any time and contribute like they did in that Georgetown game.
Yeah, well, and you saw Brendan get stepped up minutes in the Providence game as well. And one of the things, you know, I want to highlight, we'll get to a little bit more the play of Theo John of late, but Brendan Bailey's play on the perimeter and kind of not having to be helped, if you will, on the pick and roll. He can fight through the screen with his length and kind of limit those guards and get back in front of him. I think that's going to be an interesting wrinkle for Wojo to play with down the road, right? Like, we kind of thought Jamal Cain would have that role, and for whatever reasons he's seemingly out of favor or struggled a little bit for what Wojo wants. So maybe that's a springboard for Brendan Bailey to get more minutes and kind of carve out those opportunities for defensive stopper. Before we move away from the Georgetown game, though, one question I want to ask you: how much of that win for Marquette do you blame on Patrick Ewing just not being a great coach? I mean, one of the things I kept sitting there going, why is he not pressing us? We got three non-primary ball handlers bringing the ball up, and there's no press, there's no influence. I mean, we saw a press a little bit from Providence, and they did fine, but.
I'll say this. Yeah, Wojo definitely outcoached Ewing. I think that part's obvious. But, you know, maybe there are reasons Ewing didn't press. Maybe they don't practice pressing much. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's just not a team. Maybe he just doesn't like to press. And that's just not something he felt. Maybe he thought his team would be bad at it. But I don't know. He knows his team better than we do. So, but I'm sure maybe there were reasons. But, yeah, to me, just watching the game at home, I was just like you. I was like, look, if Howard's out and Chartouni's not playing, I'm not sure Marquette has a great ball handler, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're relying on the Hausers or Sakar to bring the ball up, you would think you could force some turnovers. And they did for a stretch there. They pressed a little bit. But, no, you never saw, like, 40 minutes of hell, which is kind of what I was expecting.
Right.
And, yeah, that never came around. So, yeah, I mean, would I say, like, Marquette won just because Ewing – didn't have a great game? No, I don't know if I'd go that far. But I think it is fair to say Wojo outcoached Ewing. That's fair. And I think Wojo, honestly, just did a hell of a job overall, really. Just managing minutes, finding out what's working, what's not, and made the right substitutions, and just kind of navigated that Howard disaster very well. So, yeah, I wouldn't just brush it off as Ewing had a bad game. I think Wojo had a really, really good game.
Well, yeah, and speaking of Wojo, I mean, over the last, let's say the last 10 games, or, you know, since the Wisconsin on, obviously there was a not a great result in New York against St. John's, but this has got to be the best sustained coaching performance we've seen out of Wojo, right? Like, do we think he's turned – like, I kind of think he's turned a corner in terms of, like – he just seems to be pulling the right strings. He's shortening the bench. He's getting the most out of the players. He's navigating some stressful situations like Marcus and Ed Murrow being hurt. And I just have to say, I've been impressed by Wojo the last 10 games.
The Wojo haters are quiet lately. And
yeah, that, real quiet.
I mean that happens when you win. Marquette they've won five straight Big East games for the first time. I mean, they've only lost one game since, you know, in the last 2 months. So there's not a whole lot to complain about when you're winning all the time. Yeah, now if Marquette goes and loses three out of the next four, yeah, those out, you know, the haters will have plenty to say again. But
right.
Yeah, I'd say I think the term adversity is overused, but he has navigated some obstacles very well. As I've said before, I think he finally has the type of team that he has desired as far as having everything he wants on a roster as far as offense, defense, depth, experience. I'd say this is the first team he's had that has checked all those boxes. You know, whether it's, you know, his first team just couldn't score, the past two teams couldn't play defense. To some degree, almost every team was young for one reason or another. Guys kept transferring, whatever. Like, this is the first team he's had that has a great deal of experience. So, yeah, as his roster's improved, perhaps he's improved as a coach as well. And so maybe some of that is just a benefit of having a better team overall. This is the best team he's had. But I think he's done a nice job with this team because I think he has, you know, when one thing's not working, he can go to something else. If he wants to go big, he can go big. If he wants shooters, he can put shooters out there. So, to answer your question, yes, I think Wojo has had a very good year as a coach. And he, you know, I wouldn't say he's permanently silenced all his critics because I know many of them are just waiting for that next two or three game losing streak to come back as they see. Yeah, told you, sucks. There he is.
God forbid, you know, being a three seed and going out in the first or the second round.
He has a great way that, you know, that would be the worst. That would be tough, although I think you could brush that off if that happened. Like, if Marquette had a great regular season, finished strong, won the Big East, and then just got stunned in the first day of the tournament. Yeah, I mean, that would suck, but yeah, all the haters would be out loud and proud that day, even though they had been wrong for the last, you know, 3 months.
Right. Yeah.
But hopefully that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Let's pray to whatever gods you believe in that doesn't happen. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I think it's teachable moments and the team, one of the things like the Providence game that really impressed me, that first half was definitely let's be honest, Marquette is a better team than Providence. And I say that with all due respect to Providence and Ed Cooley, who's probably my favorite coach outside of, out of Wojo. So I think Providence can be good and will be good down the road, but Marquette's just in a different class right now. And that first half was a bit of a stinker. Wojo even said as much in his post-game conference, and he's like, listen, we just didn't compete. We had to get their heads on straight, get them being more physical and playing to the game and playing our type of game. And you kind of see that happen. Now, you don't want to make a habit of, like, giving up 10-point leads at halftime or 8-point leads at halftime to inferior opponents. But, I mean, the fact that they responded, I think it was like a 22-point differential in the second half to win the game. I mean, that's, you know, that's coaching. It's not like he traded out the players. You know, maybe the players executed better or shots fell better in the second half than the first half, but a lot of that's adjustment and kind of motivation, and that in my mind is kind of a prime example of the job Wojo's done this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about what do you look for in a coach, specifically in game coaching, right? You want to see adjustments. Like if things aren't going well, you want to see him be able to make an adjustment, and whether that be strategy, you know, with the way you're playing defense, what kind of offense you're running, or substitutions. I think he's been good with both of those lately. And you want to, I lost my train of thought just there, but you know, that's one thing you always want to see is him being able to make adjustments. And the other thing I was going to say was the out of timeout plays. Can he draw up good plays? And when he needs a bucket, can he help the team get one? So I think those two areas he's been very good this season. You know, there have been three games this year where it really got away from him. One against Indiana, then a neutral site against Kansas, then another road game against St. John's. But yeah, I think there have been a number of times this season where maybe it wasn't going well for a stretch, but Wojo was able to, whether through substitutions or just changing things up at halftime, the team looked better than it did despite some early struggles. You know, Providence certainly being one of those games. Georgetown absolutely being one of those games, because when you got a wrench thrown and everything, you can even go all the way back to the Presbyterian game, which was a disaster for about 30 minutes, right? And then suddenly things started working. So I would give Wojo credit for all that he has been. If you want to say what do I want from a coach within a game, I think Wojo has kind of checked a lot of boxes in that area.
Yeah, I think so as well. And you know, the player development, I touched on Theo John a little bit earlier. He is just a man. I hate the way he's officiated, because I just, quite frankly, two or three times he gets fouls simply for existing in having a physical presence. That's unfortunate. But that guy, you know, I don't want to actually see it, but I think, you know, and again, in Wojo's post-game interview after the Providence game, he even said as much that Theo John's kind of an eraser. He said, you know, the guards are making potentially defensive mistakes on the perimeter, and having Theo protecting the rim just erases some of those mistakes. You know, so God help us if Theo graduates, you know, in the next 2 years without a replacement, we'll see if Wojo's defensive strategy really is an improvement. But you know, I just think having someone like Theo who can get buckets if necessary, but really tilts the floor on the defensive end, and just how vastly improved he is from freshman to sophomore is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, there really is no layup line when Theo John is in the game. I mean, obviously he can block shots, but he's just an intimidating looking guy, right? He's just not a guy that you look at and really want to challenge all that much, because he's just so tall and he's thick, and you know he can block your shot, and you know if there's some contact, he might hurt you.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a tough guy to go at. He has definitely created a presence there that Marquette has really not had in quite some time. And it is good that Marquette has some depth behind him, so even if he does get in foul trouble, you can bring Morrow in and probably not lose a ton. And, you know, and Helt's always back there if you need a third guy, if there's foul trouble, if there's an issues or whatever. But, you know, Theo John is earning more and more minutes, and I wouldn't say he's indispensable, but maybe he is, because that's a guy who, I don't know if I want to see this team without him, because as good as Ed Morrow is, he doesn't alter the game quite as much as John does. And yeah, I think his progress has been remarkable, and I'm excited to see what he has, you know, in the games to come and in the future here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's been great. The one, like, kind of looking back at the season or where we are at the season, the kind of the last question I wanted to ask you around that topic was, you know, with the Providence game, I mentioned they were down 8 and then kind of had to have a comeback. And it was a little, I mean, it ultimately ended up being an 11-point difference. You know, so one could argue Marquette won comfortably, but, you know, late in the game, it was a little tighter than one might have expected on paper and that sort of thing. But when I stop and think about it, and even in the game yesterday on Sunday against Providence, I was never really panicked, even down 8. At halftime, I was kind of like, yeah, we've seen this before. This team adjusts. They'll come back. They've got a lot of talent. And when you think about it, Marquette has not lost, knock on wood, a close game all season. They've lost 3 times, but those were blowouts, and they were never really, with the exception of the Kansas game, they were never really in the game. Are you starting to feel more comfortable? Like, hey, this team can, you know, maybe they're not blowing out teams, but, you know, or are you still thinking, you know, this is a cardiac team and it's a blood pressure check every game?
Maybe both. I definitely see what you're saying, that when a game is tight late, and maybe this is another thing you could chalk up to the job Wojo's doing as a coach, is Marquette is being able to grind out wins. And there is going to be somebody who's going to be making shots to make that happen. A lot of times it's Marcus Howard, but Sam Hauser did it a bunch this past week. Joey Hauser has gotten some big buckets late in games. Theo John is making plays defensively to help you win games. And we definitely saw that a few times this week, certainly in the Wisconsin game. Or, it was Morrow in the Wisconsin game. So there are a lot of guys who can contribute late in the game. So, yeah, maybe that's an interesting point. Again, hopefully we haven't jinxed anything as we head into this week. But, yeah, Marquette really hasn't gotten beat in a close game. They either win or they just get absolutely humiliated.
As long as it's tilted heavily in the favor of winning close games, I actually don't mind that too terribly much.
If we kind of keep it this rate, roughly 5-6 wins, get blown out, 5-6 wins, get blown out, that's fine.
Speaking of the triple jinx, DePaul would be the sixth game, so we really don't want to get blown out by DePaul at home.
Yes, there's some really goofy things if you want to look at it that last two times a number 12 team played at the Fiserv Forum, it lost. Marquette is currently ranked number 12.
Oh, God.
Of course, the last two times it was Kansas State and Wisconsin. So there's that.
Somebody get Sam Newberry a panic button or a Xanax or something.
Sam has already smashed the panic button, I'm sure. But the weird history of Marquette games against DePaul. Usually it's on the road for Marquette when DePaul just makes a few crazy shots and Marquette just plays like crap and loses a terrible game to DePaul. But it's happened at home too. Hopefully it doesn't happen at the Forum. But, when you look at the matchup with DePaul, the head-to-head numbers, especially if you're, going off some of the KenPom things, Marquette's has an advantage just about everywhere else. I was a little surprised to see DePaul is definitely a better rebounding team than Marquette, actually. On both ends. I mean, they're a pretty good defensive rebounding team, and they're not bad as an offensive rebounding team. They offensive and defensive numbers not so great. Certainly they're looking statistically. There are still plenty of reasons to be confident about Marquette in this game, but I don't know. What, if anything, other than just the jinx and weird things, Phil, make you afraid about DePaul?
On paper, there's not anything that scares me about DePaul. It's the Big East. Anyone can beat anyone. So weird things happen.
DePaul swept Seton Hall, which is weird.
Yeah.
Maybe Seton Hall isn't one of the best teams in the Big East, but gross. Get swept by DePaul. That is rough.
Yeah. And if you're looking at the conference standings, DePaul's tied for third, right? Raise your hand if you saw that coming, and if you say you did, you're lying. But
speaking of gross, you can't have that.
Yeah. I think DePaul is surprisingly competent. But again, on paper, I don't see anything. I was more scared with Providence's rebounding than I am with DePaul. Clearly that's a strength. So if Marquette isn't hitting shots, it's not like Marquette's going to do a lot of getting second chance points like they can from time to time. So I think Marquette's going to have to be on from a shooting perspective, but I'm not terrified that DePaul's defense is going to shut us down or that offensively they're going to go on a tear. The logical me says, and especially given how well this team has been playing for the most part over the last 5-6 games, the logical part of me says, yeah, this is maybe not in a laugher, but I would say this is a comfortable win against DePaul. But
you would hope. KenPom has it as an 11-point spread, I believe I just saw.
So, 12 points. 12, yeah.
All right, 12-point spread. But, you mentioned the shooting, and certainly the numbers there favor Marquette. Marquette, 23rd in the nation in three-point shooting. DePaul, one of the worst in the nation. Almost ranked, they're 297 in the country at the time we're recording this, at defending the three. So teams shoot for a pretty high percentage for three against DePaul, so that's good. DePaul really doesn't shoot the three well at all. They have a couple guys who can get hot in Kane and Struess. Other than that, there's not too many guys who are going to hit threes. They're ranked 243rd in the nation in three-point percentage, while Marquette's in the top 100 defending the three. So certainly that favors Marquette. You look at every matchup metric on KenPom, most of them favor Marquette. The only one, thing that concerns me is the rebounding. Is DePaul's a little bit better rebounding team, but other than that, but yeah, I mean, again, weird things happen against DePaul, and Marquette has won a few games in a row here, and you just kind of wonder when maybe they're just going to have a bad game. Hopefully it's not at home against DePaul, because you would like to keep this winning streak going for at least another game until you at least hit the road before you drop one. But yeah, I'm kind of with you, Phil. You hesitate to get too confident in the Big East because stuff happens, and just ask Seton Hall. But this is a game, like we mentioned earlier, this is the last real landmine as far as having a terrible loss on the team sheet. So you don't want to have that. So just get past this one, and then like most games the rest of the way, obviously you don't want to lose all of them, but most of the games the rest of the way are acceptable losses that really aren't going to hurt you too badly. So just take care of business here. Beat DePaul at home. Again, I would hope it would be a comfortable win, but again, weird stuff happens. But hopefully not on Wednesday at the Forum.
Yeah, I'm going to go for say it's a win, but it's with my breath held and my fingers and toes crossed, just because DePaul is weird.
Yeah. Just because at home, I'm gonna approach this one with some confidence, and I'll say Marquette will win this one by 10 points.
Okay, I'm gonna go with 7 or 8. It's gonna be a little bit of a, this team doesn't like to win comfortably, and so I think they'll be in control, but they're gonna struggle to put DePaul
just a
away.
Little heartburn.
Just a little bit.
Just a little evening heartburn. But yeah, it should be fine. Hopefully, it's fine. And then, the rematch with Xavier coming up, this will be at their place on Saturday. I mean, you certainly can expect a tough effort from Xavier, but again, this is a team that Marquette handled pretty easily the first time around. Again, that game was at home. So this time going to their place, Marquette looks like it's going to be a slight favorite at Xavier. What do you expect in the second time around with the Musketeers, Phil?
It's going to be what, the Marquette's third road game? At Georgetown. So granted they were both tight games, but they've presumably gotten that monkey off their back in terms of can't win on the road. I think Xavier's still a quality opponent, but I think Marquette, if everyone's healthy, I think Marquette can really pull off a victory here, especially if they beat DePaul. I think they go into that Xavier game focused and say, hey, look, let's really extend this run we've got, because that Butler game is looming. And the Butler road game, which I think is going to be a really tough game for them, especially after, having played a lot of games, right? They get a bye post Butler game. But I think they're starting to wear. So I think they get really focused on DePaul and Xavier and can win both of those games. So I actually think that Xavier game is probably going to be another 8-9 point victory. I think I don't know that there's anything that gives me pause to say,
yeah, just because weird things happen on the road, I'll say it'll be tighter than that. But this is another game where the 3-point shooting matchup favors Marquette pretty heavily. Xavier does not defend it well. Marquette shoots it well. Xavier does not shoot it well as a team. So you would hope the 3-point shooting advantage could come into play. And the one thing to be aware of, with Marcus Howard with that back, you never know when that thing could act up on him again.
Very true.
So that's a thing to maybe hold your breath with a little bit as you're trying to maybe talk about winning streaks and getting really hot. As great as the team was against Georgetown without Howard, you'd rather not do that again.
Right.
You'd rather have Marcus Howard every game, because hopefully he's back to 100%, and that back isn't going to flare up on him, and he'll be all right. But that's the only thing that gives me pause, saying things are really going to get rolling here, is just back spasms would be tricky, and hopefully that doesn't pop up again on them unexpectedly. But again, yeah, similar to the DePaul game, although it's not as drastic. Yeah, pretty much every metric, it kind of tilts in Marquette's favor. Marquette's a better defensive team. Marquette's a better offensive team. Shoot the ball better. Kind of rebounding advantage is a little more in Marquette's favor than it is against DePaul. So, and yeah, we saw it kind of got out of hand at the Pfizer Forum the first time around. Marquette won by 18. So, be closer to their place, but I'm once again, I'm hoping for two wins this week, Phil, and I honestly, I feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah, well, and the other thing you kind of really look at is you've got to, you know, if you're Marquette, especially if you have aspirations to win the conference, you got to feast on the lower level teams because, you know, coming up after DePaul and Xavier, you know, you've got Butler on the road, St. John's at home, and Villanova at home. I mean, I don't know that I'd forecast it right now, but that's a potential for a 0-3, you know, kind of big bump in the road there, right?
So you've that's a really tough stretch. Although it's going to be interesting with that because there's so many. It's tough to say now because there's so many games between now and then. But that game on February 9th, that's National Marquette Day, against Villanova. If first place is on the line in the Big East, like if Marquette and Villanova both arrive at that game within a game of each other, maybe tied at the top of the Big East standings, boy, that would be an atmosphere. That would be nuts.
Oh, my God. I want to experience the Fiserv Forum in those circumstances because I think the crowds have been generally pretty good, and the Fiserv Forum is a great venue for Marquette. But man, if you get like, you know, that I would say if Villanova's top of the Big East, you know, let's say Villanova's undefeated in Big East play and Marquette's only got one loss still, or maybe two losses going into that. I got to think that crowd's got a rival in enthusiasm and it'll be very largely for Marquette. That crowd's got to be comparable to the Marquette-Wisconsin game in terms of energy.
Yeah, I was actually looking ahead at the college basketball schedule as a whole, thinking along the lines of College Game Day and getting crazy like that. Say, what would be the biggest game in the nation that day? And I kind of looked at it and I'm like, Marquette could be the biggest game that day. And I kept scrolling down like, oh, Duke-Virginia rematches that day.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. Never mind about that. But who knows? You know, obviously, Duke-Virginia would be the headliner that week no matter what. But if say first place in the Big East is on the line, I mean, that would be a game certainly worthy of national headlines, that it would be the second biggest game of the day for sure. So again, that's looking way down the road. And again, we lose 3 out of 4 here and it doesn't even matter. So we'll worry about that when we get to it, but that's kind of a game I'm looking at the schedule like, man, I hope that lives up to what it currently is in my mind right now.
Oh God, yeah. If you got to win 2 this week, and then we'll see how it plays out. So I mean, you got whatever you do, don't lose to DePaul, and stash away a nice road win against Xavier. You know, and the team would be that would make them 18-3 on the year, and 7-1 in conference play. Boy, howdy, if you had come to me with that at the beginning of the year, I would have taken it for sure.
In a heartbeat. You know, speaking of great atmospheres at the Fiserv Forum, Phil, before we get out of here, since you were in the building, I do want to hear what it was like to be there on Sunday for Dwayne Wade Day. It looked great on television. It was awesome that CBS Sportsnet carried the whole ceremony on television, because so we all got all those of us who live across the country and are big Marquette fans actually got to watch the ceremony and hear from Dwayne Wade. They aired the entire thing. I thought it was really nice. It, you know, it wasn't over the top. It wasn't cheesy. It was really kind of sweet, and they had some nice moments in there. And it's cool they gave him a Letterman's jacket, and I guess they're going to give him that banner that used to hang in the old Bradley Center. I thought that was pretty cool. But what was it like to be in the arena for all of that?
It was really cool. A couple of times I got mad because somebody was cutting a really large onion in the arena. You know, I think one of the things that was really neat for me was, and I don't think they showed up during the game, was they had a lot of his former teammates, you know, on the video board kind of tributes.
Yeah, they didn't show that on television, but after it happened in the arena, the Marquette basketball Twitter account showed those videos. So if you were following the game on Twitter, you were able to see all those videos from Jay Crowder and Wes Matthews and Tom Crean and all that.
Yeah, and so it was really cool because, like, people actually, you know, not 100%, but where people would normally during those TV timeouts and stuff go run to the bathroom or run and get a beverage or whatever, some folks are sticking around and like watching these videos and kind of getting into it. A side note, I was really glad nobody, especially the students, booed when Tom Crean came on. It's like, okay, like, you know, it's a fun gimmick when he's in the, when they, in fact, they took him out of the intro video, but that's a fun gimmick then. But when he's he's kind of like doing a nice thing and praising Dwayne Wade and making it about Dwayne. I was glad everyone had the ability to hold off from their disdain with him. But I thought the tributes were nice. I thought it was a cool surprise that his kids came in, you know, which he seemed to be genuinely surprised that they were there.
They all live in Miami, of course, and he definitely did not expect them to be there. That was cool.
Yeah, and I think the halftime thing was cool, and kind of his speech and the tribute and what he talked about and stuff. I thought that was cool, but actually it was the simple, just when they first introduced him in the first half, the ovation that he got was really cool. Obviously he's been back before, but just kind of the emotion, and maybe it's more me. I mean, you and I are certainly Wade era folks, as you know. I think we've told on the podcast before, we lived in the same building as Dwayne and ran into him like once or twice. But you know, so that's just our era of being super fans, and it was really cool, and it's going to be really weird not having him in the NBA next year.
Yeah, you know anyone who's been a fan of Marquette basketball since Tom Crean showed up or before, you know, the memories of Dwayne Wade are just so great, because it took the program to a level it had not been in quite some time. Obviously, the first Final Four, since 1977, national recognition that the team really hadn't had since Al McGuire. I know, there were some decent players and some nice teams in the 80s and 90s, but nothing like that. Like nothing that, that would, have national headlines or, top 10
rankings.
That
transformative. He transformed the program and the university. And that's not stepping on anything that came before Dwayne Wade or saying, like, he built Marquette. No, he just transformed it from what it was, which was not in a great place prior to him and Crean showing up.
Yeah, it really wasn't. Like, yeah, obviously there's a wonderful history in the 1970s and, And before that, there were some, obviously some great teams, but the fact of the matter was Marquette was just an average program for, much of the 80s and 90s. I know Kevin O'Neill has some good teams, and, there were, some nice players that made the NBA here and there, but, yeah, he just elevated it to such a high level and brought so much attention to Conference USA at the time, so much so that the Big East says, why don't we dip into this league and get some of these teams, including Marquette? And not saying that necessarily that Dwayne Wade was the only reason Marquette got invited to the Big East, but he helped.
Right. He didn't hurt, that's for sure.
He didn't hurt. He raised the profile, that's for sure. And and there are several recruits who, even Jarrell McNeil said this on Twitter, like when he was starting to be recruited, went to Marquette's campus for unofficial visits and, got to meet Crean and hear stories about Wade and watch him on television, being from Chicago himself, and he got more interested in the program. So there was a ripple effect of having Dwayne Wade do that and having guys like Jarrell McNeil and Wes Matthews and Dominic James, who maybe watched Marquette on television, who maybe weren't even considering Marquette at the time, but maybe I'll be a part of this program. And there's just a ripple effect one after another of guys who continue to want to join that team. And the program became what it was, and had a few more nice years under Crean, had a great run under Buzz Williams, and it kind of all started with what Wade did. And I thought the ceremony was nice, and I thought he had a lot of nice things to say, and it's great that he still holds the university so fondly in his heart and looks back, because when he was a high school player, he didn't have a whole lot of college interest. And, part of that was, academics, and people maybe not thinking he was going to qualify, but Crean took a chance on him. And, Wade's always been thankful for that. And he certainly made the most out of it in a big way. Now he's on his way to the Hall of Fame. And, it is going to be, a bummer a little bit to know that Dwayne Wade's not going to be in the NBA next year. I know I'm going to try to catch the game when he comes down here to Dallas, and I'm going to see him against the Mavs game. against the Mavericks down here. But and I know you're going to do the same when he's got. I think he's still got one game left against the Bucks.
Yeah, he's got it like March 22nd or something like that.
Okay.
So, you know, so, if any of the internet stalkers want to come find me, I'll be there.
Okay, sweet. So everybody find Phil and bother him. But yeah, he's had a remarkable career. Probably even surpassed even his wildest dreams of what he maybe thought he hoped he could be when he was 17, 18 years old. And like even biggest fans, biggest Marquette fans out there, the day he was drafted, probably couldn't have imagined he would have done this, you know, win three titles, be a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's a case to be made. He's like the third best shooting guard ever.
Right, yeah, I was going to say he's got to be a top three all time shooting guard, right? I mean, to come out of Marquette, crazy.
I would say yes. I would know there may be basketball historians who are much better than I who could probably make that case. But yeah, off the top of my head, I would say it's Jordan, it's Kobe, and Wade comes in there like right after those two.
Right. You know. So I'll say this. It was the ceremony, I think, was the right amount of kind of like emotion and thankfulness and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't too sappy. It wasn't over the top.
Yeah, it didn't get like way over the top and like just, you know, it wasn't too long and drag on where people were like, all right, you know, enough. But like, I think it was like the perfect length. The things that were said and things that were displayed were all great, they were appropriate, and like didn't drag on and get sappy and get over the top, and he deserved all of it, and you know, got the nice proclamation from the mayor, that was cool. So yeah, I thought Marquette did a nice job with it. It's great that Wade was able to come back. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, you would have loved it if, like, say, Wade was playing the Bucks on Friday night, and then, you know, you had Marquette the next day, but the way the scheduling worked out, there wasn't a perfect day to do it, but they were able to kind of work it out so that he, you know, between, I guess, Detroit and Chicago, which is where the two games he was playing last week, he was in Detroit one night and he was in Chicago a few days later, and he just kind of a little break in between where he was able to just leave the Heat for a few days, you know, 24 hours, go to that game, bring his whole family, which was awesome, and then, you know, he just rejoined the team after that. But I was glad Marquette and Wade were able to work it out. I'm glad they were able to salute him, because, you know, I said this on Twitter, the term GOAT is thrown around a lot. Like, anytime anybody does anything half remarkable, people are throwing GOAT emojis at him. Dwayne Wade is the greatest of all time, as far as Marquette basketball is concerned. Marquette has not produced a better NBA player. With all respect to all the record holders and all the players that played, you know, and before, you know, in the 70s and before that, you know, there are a lot of great players who made the NBA, but Marquette has not produced one as good as Dwayne Wade. And it was awesome they were able to honor him, and his number hangs proudly in the rafters where it should.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better. I think that's a good finishing point. Hell of a guy.
Well,
hell, glad we had him.
And now all we can do is just hope someone else can make us want to talk about him like that in the years to come. And who knows, maybe it'll be Marcus Howard. 20 years from now, we'll be talking about him in the same way. Who knows? Maybe it'll be Sam Hauser. Maybe it'll be somebody who's not even in the program yet. We'll see how it goes. But he set a standard that is just higher than anybody else has set for the program. And now these guys are trying to live up to it, and I have to say they're doing a hell of a job. Like I said, this is the highest ranking under Wojo. Been a nice little hot streak here, won five straight. I am hoping that it's seven by Saturday evening. And then we get into a tougher part of the schedule, and then, you know, they're really shaping up, Phil, to be a high seed. I mean, some of the early, you know, bracketologists take that for what it's worth, have Marquette kind of that 3-4 range where, you know, you get a seeding like that, you're going to be optimistic that you're going to be playing in the second weekend, and hopefully this is the type of team who can do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is all starting to feel real, and like I said a little bit ago, I mean, if you had told me this is what the record would be and where we were at, I would have taken it in a heartbeat. So I don't know that certainly based on our projections, I don't know that they've vastly exceeded our expectations, because we had pretty high expectations. But, I mean, they're exceeding them a little bit so far, and so hopefully it continues and they can really – really get a good run at winning the Big East, which, you know, would be a hell of a thing for Wojo in year five.
Absolutely. So let's hope they keep it going and hope we have a good week here. As always, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. You can always hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts and your feedback on the show. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F 23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. You can always go to CrackedSidewalks.com. Leave your comments under the podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. And you can also, we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post a podcast on there as well. Phil, hope you have a good week and hope it has two wins.
Absolutely. Don't lose to DePaul.
Please don't lose to DePaul. Thanks, Marquette Nation, for that. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody.